This episode of the Disc Golf Podcast is brought to you by otbdiscs.com.
At one point in time, if you listened to the show, you knew about our little secret site to get awesome discs. It's not a secret anymore. It is a site where you can learn everything about the discs you're purchasing before you actually have them in your hands.
Get disc weight, dominess, flatness, all kinds of ratings. Learn it before you get it in there and get your favorite disc at only the best discs, otbdiscs.com. Use promo code DGPODCAST to get free shipping on your next order. What's up, disc golfers? Welcome to episode 212 of the Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Robin. Alongside me, my longtime friend, avid disc golfer, Joe.
Hey, everybody. We're back.
Slightly different episode this week. No deer review because, once again, we have had trouble getting out to the field to do actual field testing, which is super important when you review a disc. And we don't want to get on here and make it up. So slightly different than the normal. We'll have no deer review in this one. But we do want to update you on USDGC, which is where we left off in the last episode. And then the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship, which just wrapped up over the weekend. So we'll give you our thoughts on those couple of things. And I'm sure Joe will have plenty of tangents starting now.
I feel like I used a lot up in the pre-show. I will go on a tangent real quick. So it's disc golf related though, which is kind of wild.
That's
I know I'm messing up the
skeptical
the whole system.
We'll see if it's actually disc golf related or if you just are making that up. But let's go.
I know that. I mean, it's really not a tangent. This is really a part of what we're going to get into. I'm going to use it now before we talk about Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. Simon Lizotte dropped out. He put kind of a heartfelt message out, I think, on like Instagram. His elbow that's been bothering him. The reason he didn't throw forehands aside from USDGC for the majority of the season was enough that he just wasn't feeling confident in any of his throws. You could tell with his putting kind of down the stretch and even just his drives and approach game were just off. Something was up. So basically, I just wanted to take my tangent moment to say the same thing that he said to Rick when he was going through the Lyme scare at the beginning. If Simon, because obviously you're listening, you're like super into our podcast, I really hope you go to a doctor, get it all figured out. If you need to do something about it, if there is some sort of surgery or something, get it done. Don't just stay away from a doctor, rest it, hope it gets better. A professional is probably needed, and that's going to make it better for the longevity of your career.
I don't even know if I know you anymore. Like, this was supposed to be some random tangent about like a bag of Cheetos that you got somewhere, and here you want to have like a conversation about actual disc golf.
Do you want to talk about the beer that I bought for the podcast today?
Actual disc golf news, and then followed up by like an injury update on a player, and then like sound medical advice. That's not what people came here for, first of all. So why don't you take a step back? Maybe you could have like a quick fart that like help center your chi and get back to what the people, you know, really are here for, which is...
So today on the way to the podcast, I got to Robin's house and then realized he had messaged me on my way and said, can you grab drinks? I don't have any here. And I looked at the message. He sent it quickly after I told him I was on my way, but I didn't read my phone at all until I got here.
Because Joe's a good person. He doesn't look at texts when he drives.
No, not at all. Well, and it's a Slack message, so my phone will read me if people text me, but it was a Slack message that doesn't come through. Anyways, park in his driveway, see the message, and then leave to go get booze. Get to the liquor store, They were all out of like every beer. Like every single light beer.
That's
Every single IPA, I'm every single,
this is all lies.
You know, whatever, you know, medium style beer. Mm-hmm. So I had to.
Despite their normal, you know, fairly decent selection of craft beers from local breweries, which is normally like, you know, probably.
Yeah, like our liquor stores have really good selections, 15 to be honest.
15 to 20 different types of
at
six
least.
Packs.
At
and,
least.
Then a nice collection of 12 packs, and then not to mention the 16 and 24 ounce cans of said beers. And yet.
So they only had tall cans of Truly Lemonade, Buzz Balls, and Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra.
Yeah, so my theory is that Joe just gave $40 to a homeless man and let him go into the store to bring said alcohol out, and rewarded him with like two or three of those $1 shot bottles that sit at the counter. I'm guessing that's what happened. Is that accurate?
I wish. I would feel great if I was able to enlighten someone's life like that. But no, that's all I had. So we've got PBR and black cans that are 6.5%. And they taste fine. Oh, you haven't had one yet.
I've not. Oh, I have not. It's so weird that I haven't because
hey, it's bonus. It's just straight beer review.
Yeah, no, it's obviously
because it's definitely a high quality beer.
Yeah,
Robin, crack that. Let's give us your like first impressions.
Oh, of Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra.
Yeah,
that comes in a blue can that is
no,
suspiciously
it's black. That's a black can.
It's got the blue ribbon on it.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, because
comes in a.
So does all the.
It's got
ribbon.
Some black stuff going on.
Yeah, it's
on
black.
It,
that's
it
my
just
point.
Overall, Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra. How great could this be? This could be awesome.
I don't know. I do know that I've thought about drinking. They have like their hard coffee,
not just like.
But it's only 5%, so I haven't fucked with it.
Are we sure this isn't just like the run of Pabst that went sour, and they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's let it run a little longer. The alcohol is gonna jump up. It's gonna ferment a little longer, and we'll just sell it to the fucking alcoholics. And you just see a black box, and you're like, yeah, that means it's gonna be great.
Do you really think the black box is what sold me on it?
I do.
Are you? I'll tell you 100%.
All right. Actually, I know exactly
why.
Yeah,
of course you
do. I'll tell you exactly why. It was probably like $9.99, right?
No.
And you saw 6.5.
There you go.
That's not that good,
though.
There
you
go. The 6.5, that's not like exceptional.
But 12 6.5 cans. I mean, I guess it's all of it together. The 12 6.5 cans for like $9. That together is the bang bang right there.
God, you're so... This is...
That's like you got a 12-pack of Lagunitas IPA for
still,
$9.
You still have to experience
Boom.
The taste, but like Boom. A 12-pack of Lagunitas IPA.
You haven't tasted it yet.
I know what it's going to taste like. I can smell it. I know what it tastes like. It tastes like Pabst that has gone bad. Like I know that before.
What else does it taste like?
I don't know. I haven't taken a sip yet,
take
but
a
I can
sip.
I can tell you that
Robin,
it tastes like bad Pabst.
Take a sip. Ha! You're wrong. It doesn't really taste like Pabst.
It tastes like bad Pabst.
It kind of tastes... I mean, I'm going to keep drinking it. I mean, not a confessional. I think this is... I don't think anyone is surprised by me saying this, but... If we go back to last Monday, if we call that a week, in the last 7 days, this is the second 12-pack of...
Oh, my God.
Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra I've purchased.
Oh, my God. It's so fucked up.
I've definitely had one of these in my refrigerator and drank them
just
in the last week.
Just so I can make this perfectly clear, this is a terrible beer. This is not good. Like,
this
tastes like somebody left the Pabst out for a little while and then squirted like a pretty good squirt of honey in it. That's about it. So like a malty like sugary,
it's malt
alcohol-y.
Liquor. It's malt liquor. It's not beer.
Oh yeah, no, I know. Well, I mean, malt liquor is it can be beer, but
yeah, well, yeah.
Malt.
Here's the biggest piece to know about Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra. Don't worry, there's plenty more here to
go
around.
No, I'm psyched.
You're
going
to have more of these, and it's going to be fine.
Pumped.
This, and maybe just my palate has changed from my days.
You know what I think this is?
Steel Reserve in, at room temperature. This is very bad at room temperature, but nice and cold, it's all right.
I can't believe you drank this at room temperature.
I did not drink this at room. I had one maybe.
How do you know it's bad at room temperature?
I had like one. Yes, I had one at room temperature.
You just lied to everyone.
Okay. I had one at room temperature that might also have been flat because I opened it the night before and felt bad and woke up in the morning and just drank it.
Wow, that's better. That's
Yeah, it's not better. But if you just chug it, it's not that bad. I mean, it's bad, but it could be worse if you're sipping on it.
Wow.
So what were you saying this is?
It reminds me of like the baby E40. Remember we
oh,
reviewed?
Yeah. You mean the E40 40?
Yeah. We reviewed that like way back when.
Shit. Now I got a crack one. I got a crack. Like I need
like a baby version of that, which is not good. Not good.
You know what I think it reminds me of? I'm going to take one more sip.
Like for a beer that tastes this bad, I expect it to be 8-9%. Like if I'm going to tolerate taste like this, I want it to be like 8-9%.
This is exactly what it is. You ready for this? This is, which is just bad, but I'm going to drink it because I'm going to drink it. This is PBR with a natty ice aftertaste.
I don't even think it's that.
And natty ice is like almost.
Well, how do you account for like the kind of sugary honey type taste that it has?
Natty ice has that like malty. Gross.
It does. I could.
It's
be.
Been a really. Long
it's
time.
Been a very long. Time.
That's just in my like in my.
I haven't had a natty ice in.
I was having like
forever.
Taste bud deja vu. I could be very wrong, and I will be honest. I will probably might buy more of this, but I will never.
Why would you,
natty
why
ice.
Would you buy more than that? More of this?
I don't hate it.
It's terrible.
Cheap. It's 6.5%.
No, that's not a good threshold. Like, if it's free and 6.5%, I would consider it. But like,
I mean,
Lord,
kind of free.
Come on, dude. We have a podcast. Like, we have a beer budget. Like, you can buy.
They were out of all the beer.
They were not.
There was no other beer. Like, I just did
you're,
all they had.
You're the biggest liar in the whole world.
There's all the beer they had.
I don't even know.
Go there tomorrow. You'll see.
Oh, yeah. I will go there tomorrow, and I will send pictures to everyone of all the delicious beers that you took instead.
Right? Hopefully,
like
they
you're
got
telling,
a, hopefully they got a big shipment overnight tonight.
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
I hope so for them. Yeah, oh, you know what else I got
you're
recently?
You're so full of shit.
That I didn't have enough at home to bring, but we could do.
You probably left like terrific beer. Why didn't you get us a good beer? You knew we were going to be on the podcast. Why didn't you get us like a terrific beer? There were terrific beers there. I know there were.
Honestly, there were beers that we've had a million times. There wasn't anything that stood out. There was nothing like extra cool that I hadn't seen before or like rare. It was all the regular stuff, which, like, I'm sure if I took a picture and put it on Slack, there's a lot of people be like, that's at your liquor store, you're a fucking asshole.
Exactly.
But basically, I mean, honestly, I did it because I'm an asshole. And you know I did it that reason.
You did do
I
that.
Purely did it so you'd have to drink fucking PBR extra tonight.
You did do
110%.
That's exactly
like, there's
why
no,
did that.
There's no, like...
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. I'll drink fucking garbage. Robin has a better palate than me, and this way he has to do it. That's honestly 100% why I did this. It's like when our friend Corey in college would say, I'm studying. I'm not going to drink tonight. And then when we went to go pick up booze, he'd be like, here's $2.50. Can you pick me up a big slam of Pepsi? Because back then there were big slams. You youngins don't know what that is. That was like a liter of Pepsi with a big wide mouth. So he was really into it. He'd be like, can you give me a big slam of Pepsi? And every time I'd return, he'd be like, dude, they were all out of Pepsi. There were no Pepsis left.
But you know,
so
what
I
else
got you this
40.
I got you with this 40 of St. Ides. And I like, 99 out of 100 times he was like, well, I guess I'm not studying tonight. Fuck you, Joe. And he'd drink his 40, and we'd have lots of fun.
Yeah, I get it.
We're having fun tonight.
You're trying to recreate a moment. That's fine.
We're having fun tonight.
But here's the deal. We do, at some point, need to talk about the USDGC. And then...
Chris Dickerson won. Paige Pierce won. All right, what else are we going to talk about?
Wow, Joe. And then we need to talk about the P Tour, the Disc Golf Pro Tour.
Yes. The DGPT Championship?
I just abbreviated the P Tour.
The P Tour. That sounds like a really bad movie or series that should never watch.
Well, I'm sorry. It's just this the P Tour. What is it called? The Pabst Extra?
Is that Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra?
Okay, got it. So it's affecting my ability to read off of my computer. But nonetheless, we will talk about the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. I did a bracket. Joe did not because he's a piece of shit. He's already admitted to drinking a 12-pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon Extra this week. So that's most likely the reason why he did not fill out a
bracket. Let me take one more step back, too, and say... I believe this 12-pack that I purchased is my third overall 12-pack of PBR Extra that I've purchased.
Wow. So the lies keep growing.
Not this week.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe like a month ago I bought a 12-pack of it. Yeah, out of like being like, this has got to be ridiculous.
How many heroines have you done this week?
No heroines.
Okay. You sure? Because you're going to change your mind in five minutes?
Look.
Or...
ingrown
those
hairs.
Those are bug bites. Those are ingrown hairs.
I got hairy ass arms. Ingrown hairs that look like track marks.
Yeah, mosquito bites.
Or like needle marks, not track marks. The track marks go up your arm and shit.
Yeah, of course. So very, very, very convincing. Would you like to talk about USDGC further than your Chris Dickerson, Paige Pierce analysis?
It pains me to say this, because I am a big fan. Paul just pooped the bed.
Yeah, I'd say so. In this case, it's rare that we say that.
I think the last time he lost, which was like two tournaments ago to Heimberg, it was Heimberg winning, in my mind, more than Paul losing. This was Paul losing. This is Paul losing. Good on Dickerson. He really crushed it for multiple rounds. Had that head of steam to get after it, but Paul could have had it easy. And he didn't do it.
And it was over the course of a couple rounds, too.
Yeah.
That was just, I don't know that he could have had it easy. Because Dickerson and Heimberg had some crazy good rounds towards the end, but when it came down to it, he just didn't make the putts that you normally see him make, and for him to go into a final round and have a chance to win it, and then just not put down a Paul Macbeth round. It's true. Yeah, he didn't do it. But at the same time, Dickerson won with a plus two.
Right.
So
touche. You're right. I think I'm. Yeah.
So I don't know that it's fully on Paul in that case. Like he had to make up a lot of ground, and Calvin Heimberg had a seven down.
You're right. It was multiple. I honestly. I didn't watch nearly anything close to enough of the final round. It's that that third round was where I was like, what?
Yeah, no, the third round, Paul definitely was not himself. And especially towards the end, the scorecard may not totally show it because you see a bunch of blue birdies, but then you see, a bogey, a double bogey, towards the end of the round. But there were also on some of those holes where he had birdie putts he could have made and could have put himself in way better position. But going into the final round, I don't think that was a Paul Melt situation there. I think Chris Dickerson put himself in a great position to win. Calvin Heimberg put together an incredible round, and were it not for a seven on hole 17A, would have won. Which is absolutely brutal. I think that's probably the bigger story of the whole deal.
I mean, it's a bigger, you're right, but it's like a story every year at USDGC, which is so sad. But that's like, that's, in my mind, that's great hole design.
You think hole 17A is great hole design?
I like that it can swing something that hard.
Man, I think you're alone in that, man, my friend.
I think just for players to continue to push hard the entire tournament, they know that there's a chance. They still have a chance. They can overcome something that might seem unsurmountable because that is in the way. And it's happened, obviously, multiple times. I think at our local course, 17, for a small amount of time, was the same kind of world, a little island.
Yeah, but that was 170 feet with no hay bales blocking you from getting
and
in
no
there.
And no water hazard to lose your disc.
On the other side. How many holes do you regularly see where a pro player takes an eight? That's my deal.
Oh, there's that one in Europe that's a par 10. You know that one?
Yeah.
That I just made up?
I get it. This is why USDGC is not doesn't go towards your player rating, the stroke and distance rules that apply.
Well, here's the thing, too. They now have a drop zone. But what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Well, they do have a drop zone, but it's only after three missed drives.
Right, so, but I'm saying like 3 or 4 years ago, like you unload the bag. And then go pick up discs and come back. Yep, like,
yeah, so basically...
There was no bailout.
Eight was worst case scenario. There were tons of eights. I think it's a bummer for these players to have to lose on a hole like that where their shot is not that much worse than their opponent's. Like, a very minute difference in the throw ends up causing them multiple strokes. And that's one of the complaints about USDGC to begin with. And the only reason I'm saying this, not that we all know what USDGC is, when you say that's great hole design, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is just like, it's just a hole designed to fuck people over
and destroy their hearts.
Yeah. It's not, I don't know. It's great hole design. It's sinister. Sadistic would be, I think,
maybe
a good way to describe it.
You don't know.
Maybe you are. I don't know. You do a podcast with me, so that's probably true. But nonetheless, I don't know.
I think out of everything on that course, they have done so much weird rope changes and flag changes. There's been so much like weird manufactured stuff, and that's one that was manufactured and weird from the beginning, and they've at least stayed with it. In my mind, it's the most iconic hole.
See, my thought is on that course, and here, like, there is enough water on that course and natural obstacles that you could just let the water BOB and take away the rest of the hazard. And even on hole 17, just leave it alone. Like, take the hay bales out, leave it alone. They still have to, for a birdie, put the disc within, 20 feet of water on the back end. So you still have to, like, lay up short and then putt at... So your choice would be lay up short and then putt at the water, potentially going out of bounds on your second shot, which gives you best chance at a four. So it still could be a very punishing hole if you take away the island aspect and the hay bales to it. And then same with 18. Like, I think that is the main complaint. Like, do those aspects make the course better? I don't think so. I think this course would be fun to watch if there weren't those extra punishments involved. And I think there's a way to make minor tweaks and have it be just as good.
Here's another thing.
So many people, and I totally agree with them, that watching USDGC is just aggravating.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're watching great players get punished for things that, you know, more or less they made a good shot and it just didn't work out. And it's not fun to watch that, especially when you're seeing someone lose as a result of it. So
here's one thing I think we probably won't agree on, but I'll throw it out here. Winthrop Gold has the only triple Mandos I can think of that makes sense.
Okay.
I mean, the one is an iconic big weird wall.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Like, it's a tough shot. It's not like...
I have less issue with that one.
We see a lot of triple Mandos that are like 8 feet off the tee that it's like, you just want to put banners up and that's fine. Like, yeah. And then there's, I don't remember what hole, there's the other one that's a good like 300 feet down the fairway that there is a ceiling even if you didn't have that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So like, I think that's cool. And those are the only triple Mandos basically I think I can say makes sense or I've.
Yeah, and the rest of them are more or less advertised.
Oh, totally.
In the majority of the tournaments, I think the other
and
one,
they, those probably
like
came
European
about
Open
because
one
of
is
because of USDGC. Other courses are like, oh, I want a triple Mando.
Yeah, yeah,
and then so, it's awful.
Yeah, I don't know. I USDGC has a ton of history, and it's fun to watch, but I think. Actually, I know. I won't say I think. I know that that tournament could be better if they eliminated those things that make it controversial. And maybe it would...
Oh, let women play?
Well, they do let... They do, but they don't...
It's not USDGC.
Yeah, no. Well, the women can qualify for the
USDGC. It's
true. We've
seen it.
But the USWDGC does not get anywhere near the hype. And is it even the same this year? I thought they changed the format for some reason. I don't know. I think that it could be, I think it's time to start, not time to start talking about it. I think it's time to say, hey, we get it. There's enough holes on this course that cause a problem. Do we really need these ones in there to make it? Like, why can't we tweak this course and make it standard PDGA?
Right, like, can we just take 1 year? You know, not even do it USDGC. Let's do an alternate tournament at Winthrop Gold without ropes and flags.
And stroke and distance.
And stroke and distance.
And then, so to the point where it's PDGA compliant, so that it counts towards your rating. And I think that would be a fun tournament.
And that's what, see what scores are, because I'll tell you right now, and I know the opposite has been said by...
And I know people would score. I get it.
Right,
and
I know
nobody
that,
wants
that
it
people,
to be like the memorial.
After Preserve, there was so much shit talk about, oh, like, we don't want it to be, I don't know, stupid
that
comments from
that
someone
was,
not
I
very
mean,
smart. Or not, I take that back. I don't mean that. Stupid comments for someone who has not spent a lot of time paying attention to this game or being a part of this game.
Someone that perhaps plays a lot of cornhole.
Probably.
For instance.
Yeah. And I'll tell you right now, like, the sports I enjoy, I'm coming around to baseball. It took me a long time. The sports I enjoy, you can score a lot of points. Like, one of my biggest kickbacks to soccer and baseball and shit is like, oh, 1-0, neat.
Neato.
So 90 minutes of people just passing a ball back and forth. Not into that.
Yeah.
I want to
yeah.
see scoring. Fuck yeah, I want to see scoring.
Until you and with those sports, there's a barrier to entry in terms of until you understand the nuances to the defensive aspects of the game, it's difficult to appreciate.
Yeah, soccer sucks.
So
yeah, I said it, and I'm not gonna step back from it.
But yeah, I just don't. I don't know. Like watching even so the Pro Tour Championship, which came immediately after USDGC, is an extremely unorthodox setup for our tournaments. There's literally nothing like it in our tour of our disc golf tour. There's no bracket style events that even have remotely close to any kind of payout, let alone getting, you know, 15 grand for the winner. But nonetheless, they still play on a course that makes sense for these players. And I don't know. I think it's time for USDGC to look in the mirror and maybe change it. I think it was it's had a good run in its current format, but I think that with the increase in how much video footage we have and how close we see these things and how much more people are watching, people don't like shit that's unfair. And there's several holes at USDGC that just aren't fair. Like, good shots get punished and get punished to an extreme degree. And people get tired of that shit. So I think they want to see the best players in the world throw great shots and make great putts and score well. And I don't have any problem with that. Like, I don't care if people throw 18 down. That's great. I want to see that. You still have to make every shot and play the course perfectly.
Hey, Jomez, because I know you're listening. Multiple people from Jomez. What videos have the most views that you've ever put out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they the ones where people throw 18 down around, or the one where someone beats somebody else like -4 to -2?
Now, granted, the whole 17 meltdowns probably have a good amount of views to them, but still, it's not something anybody wants to see. And I don't think any disc golfer would tell you, like, when you ask people what their favorite course is or whatever it is, no one ever lists Winthrop.
No. And like I said, I like the fact that it can make people say, I'm still going to push because there's a possibility. I like that. With that said, watching coverage, I don't like watching puppies get kicked.
Yes, neither do I.
I don't like seeing players I really enjoy, even players I don't enjoy, just being destroyed and
wow. So I just
getting close to like tearing up on holes.
Yeah.
Which that first round, Simon was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And Conrad too. Conrad showed more emotion in that than I've ever seen, which wasn't much. But he had a rough one too. Not only did he have to go to the drop zone, but he also floated, you know, some pretty, pretty putters into the water, which stinks.
Yeah. All right. So do you want to move on to the tour championship?
Can you rock the top four in MPO and FPO since you have it up? Just we haven't talked
for USDGC.
For USDGC, yeah.
Sure. So top four, Chris Dickerson with the win at 30 down. Calvin Heimberg in second place at 29 down. Ricky Wysocki in third place at 26 down. And then Garrett Gerthy in fourth place at 25 down. And I'll do top five just because Paul McBeth in fifth place at 24 down, tied with Kyle Klein.
Yeah, Kyle Klein, also up and coming. Down.
So that was FPO, or sorry, MPO. And then for FPO, we have to go to an entirely different tournament.
Silly.
Which is silly, which takes me a couple extra clicks. So the women's national championship, we had Paige Pierce at 21 down, and then Katrina Allen at 17 down in second place. Sarah Hokum and Heather Young tied in third place at 9 down, and then Owen Scoggins in fifth place at
Look
8
at
down.
Look at Owen. Owen, like, been out of the game for a minute, come back, do some real shit. That's awesome.
So, a little annoying that I had to switch pages, but nonetheless.
Yeah, you figure you can just, like, but, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we can move on to Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship.
So, the Pro Tour Championship, a lot of fun to watch. And
rad being able to like wake up and FPO's already like rolling.
I know that was great. I watched a bunch at my work and had a good time with it. I do like the change up of the bracket play. It's very interesting. I do think I think it shows that it's a slight disadvantage to those top seeds. Like these other and it was mentioned during the coverage over and over again. By Jamie and Nate Doss that you know maybe these guys that aren't you know they're not totally dialed in these other guys that started playing on day two day three that had gotten their championship teeth
some muscle
their
memory
their competitive you know fight has been honed in and they're ready to go and then here it is in the second to last day okay Ricky okay Paul. Go, like, get in there and beat everybody. And it's like, well, maybe the guys that started playing on day one had a little bit of an advantage. Nonetheless, it wasn't those guys at the end.
I would say the only one that maybe was there on day one, I think.
Hannum, yeah. Hannum ended up making it all the way to the final. But yeah, like all of those. Of those guys that were that had the bye to the semifinals, I don't think a lot of them have. I guess Heimberg and Kevin Jones, but Chris Dickerson and Hannum were earlier seeds and made it through there. So it's a lot of fun to watch, and just seeing these guys having to, and not to mention. Not an easy course. I mean,
I was gonna say this is a much cooler course to watch, and I think.
Oh yeah,
I think the first two were at the same course, or at least last year's. I was not stoked on that course.
I think it's the same course.
Yeah, I think it was the same course the last.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah,
and then they switched it up for this one.
I thought it was the same.
Is this is the same course as last year's?
I think so.
I remember there being a lot of open holes.
Okay. I think it's the same one, but I could be totally wrong. So please don't Google it. Just message someone.
Okay, I'll message someone.
I think it's the same course. Nonetheless, Calvin Heimberg having an incredible round in the semis, shooting 10 down and just like really pacing himself ahead. But that doesn't matter. In a bracket challenge play that all gets erased, but going into the right. semifinals, he looked like the dominant force. And, he was just all over the place, even going OB on 18, but still canning his par putt. That was incredible. 18 kind of is a long downhill, like 500 and something foot shot, I'm maybe just right around 500, but nonetheless, going OB long on it and then still making the putt to close out a 10 down round. He was just electrifying and looked like the player to beat. But you get into that final round and you have to do it again. It doesn't matter what you did the day before. So he gets in there. The final grouping: Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, Austin Hannum, and Calvin Heimberg. And it came down to the very, very end. Kevin Jones taking the win over Chris Dickerson and virtually on the final hole.
On 17, Dickerson missed a putt that I don't think I've ever seen him miss.
No, that was hard.
I mean, it was elevated a little bit, but it was, I don't know, 18 feet. And that's in my mind. So it probably was 25.
Yeah.
But still, that's not a putt that I can, especially in this situation, can ever remember Dickerson missing a putt like that.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
To par, which would have been birdie, where Jones parred, which would have cleaned up like.
Yep.
And it would have been playoff and very and good then, chance Kevin then, Jones still takes it down.
And then just like an unnecessary bogey on 18 too.
Yeah.
Just really didn't. He was in position to win this tournament going into it, and had every chance to, and just
zeked it.
He just couldn't quite close that, and that's too bad because Chris Dickerson, we talk about his final rounds all the time, and he's gotten some wins here and there, but he hasn't had quite the results for the electrifying rounds that we've seen him put down. So,
I mean, granted, he just came off a win at USDGC, mm-hmm. and to roll in and grab second at DGPT
yep.
championship, like,
no, that's a nice
last,
couple of weeks.
In the last 2 weeks, he just made a very substantial amount
yeah,
of money.
Probably, yeah, doubled his earnings
for the year.
For the season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, you know, it's so funny. Like, you had Calvin Heimberg shoot 10 down the day before, and he barely scratched out a 2-down. You know, he was going into the final 9 at even and had to just scratch it out from that point forward. Same with Austin
right.
Hannum.
Right.
And Dickerson and Kevin Jones had just run away with it in the early parts, just a whole bunch of birdies, and Dickerson just with the bogey on hole 18 to...
Well, it's just a course, too, that inches
yeah.
can destroy
oh,
your
yeah.
shot on a hole.
Well, this is super wooded, and the areas that aren't wooded, you know, you still have to hit a difficult line. So there's so much difficulty built into the lines on this course with all the trees and everything there. So it has this difficulty built in. Where we were complaining about the manufactured lines on USDGC, this course is just complete opposite. The trees what are going to get you. So you're talking about Hornet's Nest in Charlotte, North Carolina, and this course will eat you up if you're not ready for it. So, and that was the hot round being, what, 10 down by Hamburg?
In the hot round.
So, you know, when we look at other tournaments and we see, you know, 14 downs and 15 downs and 16 downs, and the fact that 10 down seemed like a Superman round,
right.
That says something about this course. So this was very difficult. So
I will say, just a quick look. 2018, I believe 2019 also was a course in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, cool. All right.
Yeah, definitely like way more open, weird.
All right.
Trees near the greens.
I just have completely bad memory.
Yeah, it was a totally, totally. I really didn't actually like the course to the point that I didn't watch very much of the championships because there was weird OB. There were fence lines on the sides.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right.
And weird, like,
yeah.
short palm trees. There was just, weird
you're right.
course.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And I didn't like it. Like, this is the kind of course that should be a championship.
No, it's funny. Course. Like, the old school disc golfers among us, like, wanting to see disc golf in the woods and wanting to see players fight out of crazy situations and have to deal with, you know, rough that is, you know, natural. And
and I love watching it. If you were like, Joe, let's go play this super wooded course for like a cool birthday extravaganza, I'd be like, no,
I don't
want to play that.
Can we go to that golf
course?
I'm going
to suck super hard at that.
No, I did. I mean,
but I want to watch the pros play it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I mean, it's there is always a balance that needs to be met in our sport that has to do with fairness and what brings out the best in a player yet doesn't punish unnecessarily. And it's incredibly hard for a course designer to meet with the limited resources that we have as the disc golf community. We cannot just spend tons of money to build and design our courses like Ball Golf has done over the last 100 years to build their fairways and plant the trees and maintain them, to have these perfect fairways designed for exactly the type of shots they're supposed to hit. We don't have that. We are working with public parks for the most part, or we are adapting our game to ball golf courses. That is not an easy thing to do for any course designer. So whenever we critique this stuff, it's not like we don't understand why these things happen. It's just that if, as the sport grows, these are the things we have to address. And why? And there are certain things, like with USDGC, that are 1,000% addressable. It's a simple fact of how the scoring is set up for a particular hole. On other courses, it's just that this is the land we have to work with, and we're doing the best we can.
Right. I will say, too, something we haven't brought up about this, which is very cool. I mean, I guess CBS Sports Channel was neat, but this is going to be on ESPN2.
It is, yes.
Which, I mean, maybe I'm in the minority, I doubt it, is a much bigger deal than
I think CBS it is, Sports. Yes. I think in terms of viewers, it's a much bigger deal, yes.
Like, very, very cool. I was just pointing it to you, so we're watching some of it right now, and I was watching someone filming for Jomez climbing out of a tree, which is sweet. Like, neat angles. Get yeah. after it. Like, master Super your cool. craft. I would definitely, that's not something you're going to see a lot. People with cameras climbing up in trees to film disc golf.
Yeah.
Gosh, right. What do you throw on hole two? Because there's not really a...
Oh, this is a G-Star Thunderbird.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there's sure. not, there's no safe out, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
Unless you want to throw a putter and 40 and, feet.
Yeah, and I'm perfectly fine with going long on that. And 330, well, it's kind of up on a hill.
Well, 330 to the pin. I'm yeah, 330 to the pin, it's probably what? I want to
go over the water.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's probably 300, maybe 295 to carry the water.
Yeah, probably. But then the pin is up high, so yeah.
Ooh, that hyzer is a scary line. There's like, I mean, he got through.
Yeah, and you hit one of those trees, and
exactly, yeah, you're in the water.
Yeah, no thanks. All right, so any closing thoughts here before we end the pod?
We did not talk FPO at all.
We didn't.
So I think it's definitely worth bringing up this. I mean, the same thing when you talk about FPO, you talk about MPO, those with all the buys have less time on the course. Could be detrimental slightly, but correct. We did have a very big win in FPO. Kevin Jones, very cool, but not like, wow, I'm so blown away that he could have, I'm not even that, and not saying that the FPO is that much. FPO just, we had a breakthrough
player. And it was a playoff too.
Right, and it's someone that we've seen for 2 years now. Really, this year she's come on and really been a contender, but never really had that big signature win. Mm-hmm. What better tournament?
I know.
Than this.
Talk about getting that cash.
To get a signature win.
Awesome.
And that's totally Haley awesome. King. And Haley King, I see it a lot in Slack as like slowly just becoming people's favorite FPO player.
Yeah.
She's solid in every part of the game. Except, I mean, it really maybe is mental, because it's just little lapses, I feel, where she falls apart. She's a solid putter, driver, forehand and backhand. Approach game is good.
92% C1X in the final round.
It's just little things here and there that takes her out of contention.
She's got a good forehand, decent player, and it's fun to watch. I always like to think like about the young FPO players that are coming up, and like, what if you could combine like Heather Young's putting ability with someone like Haley King that can throw quite a bit farther?
Let's take a step back, because Heather Young is maybe younger than Haley King.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, what if you could add some of that?
Yeah.
Those traits and just like see that come together, and maybe Heather Young develops more power as she grows. Certainly. A possibility.
Oh, totally.
But it's fun to watch with FPO. And Paige Pierce, she busted a lot of brackets, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Almost as many as Paul McBeth did.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lesson that we forget every single year on these bracket challenges, which is that, you know, the long format of a normal tournament over four or five rounds or three, four, five rounds favors the better player. Single round favors the hot round. So you can't just bet on the best players in the world when you're dealing with this stuff, because they don't have the benefit of letting the bad luck, the weird bounces of a single round evening out over the course of multiple
bad
rounds.
Are just being like that slight bit off, which we've seen multiple times in a three round tournament.
And just knowing
someone that, just like having a not great round, salvaging it, and then pulling it together. Like if you look at, randomly jumps to my mind, San Francisco Open the first year, Paul McBeth, I walked on that card with FaZe, and he did not have a good round. He still was like minus six, which was gross, but he was off in a lot of his throws. He had clean up shots to fix it. And then the next two rounds, he was lights out and took the tournament.
Yeah.
But he was not even, I don't think he was on the lead card after day one.
Yeah.
And in this type of tournament, if you're not on lead card after day one, you're out.
Yeah. Yeah, and disc golf and stroke play like this is designed to have the cream rise to the top over the course of multiple rounds.
Right.
And so a single round, yeah, you might want, a great player can have a bad round, and that's all it takes. But over the course of four or five rounds, they're going to be at the top, and that's typically what we see. So
yep.
Bracket play is you know, a little bit more random, but it's a lot more exciting for our players. And I enjoy watching. I think it's fun. I'm glad we only have one of these. I don't want to see a ton of bracket play tournaments, but one of them is pretty awesome. And I
like it. And congrats to Haley King and Kevin Jones.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all we got for you in this episode of the Disc Golf Podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsor, otbdisc.com. Use promo code DGPODCAST to get free shipping on your next order. They are the best disc golf retailer in the entire world. Check them out. Next, check out our website, throwstuffatstuff.com. We have an incredible, we have a decent selection of DGP discs at the moment that are up there. You can also hit the join Slack link in our main navigation that will take you to the best disc golf chat group in the entire world. And I do mean that. So check it out. Throwstuffatstuff.com. Join Slack. You'll find the most incredible disc golf chat group in the entire world. So hit that up. Lastly, patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. If you like the main show, you will love our pre-show recordings. We do a pre-show before every single main show, and it's good times. It's like doubling the amount of DG podcast that you get. So check those out. Once again, patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. In the meantime, get out there and throw stuff at stuff.
This is a song for the aceless. But those with aces, listen closely. You don't always have to huck it hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do. Sometimes you got to lay it up and fucking outrun an ace or two. Sometimes you got to ease. If you wanna put the D's in the B's, Sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm gonna throw it softly. I'm gonna huck it gently. I'm gonna flick it smoothly. I'm gonna toss it so sweetly. And then you say, hey, I hit some metal. And then you say, wait a minute, Robin, I think I'm starting to get it now. Could you fill my throat for me? That's fucking teamwork. What's your favorite disc? That's cool with me. It's not a trespass, but I guess it works for you. What's your favorite beer? The only answer is an IPA, so let's go to the bar. And then I'm gonna flick it so sweetly. And then I'll fucking hook it softly. And then I'll fucking throw it perfectly. But then I'm gonna hook it.